This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. And here are some of the stories NPR is following today. Two car bombings in Iraq killed more than 40 Iraqis and wounded 140 others. And a new poll suggests that American support for the war in Iraq has grown over the past month. The Pew Research Center for People in the Press also says support for President Bush has gone up. You can hear details on both those stories coming up later today on All Things Considered. Tomorrow on Science Friday, Ira Flatow will be in Seattle for a special live broadcast from the Science Fiction Museum. You can join him for that broadcast tomorrow on Talk of the Nation Science Friday. We've been talking about the 9/11 Commission's conclusions today about Aerospace Defense Command and the Federal Aviation Administration. Yesterday, the 9/11 Commission issued a report on ties to al-Qaeda and came to the conclusion that Iraq played no part in the plot of September the 11th and went on to say that despite some contacts, there was no substantive link between Iraq and al-Qaeda. A connection to that terror group was part of the Bush administration's case for war in Iraq. At the White House today, President Bush was asked why, given the panel's conclusion, he continues to insist that there was a relationship between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda.
Oh, the reason I keep insisting that there was a relationship between Iraq and Saddam and al-Qaeda because there was a relationship between Iraq and al-Qaeda. This administration never said that the 9/11 attacks were orchestrated between Saddam and al-Qaeda. We did say there were numerous contacts between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda.
President Bush speaking with reporters earlier today at the White House. If you have questions about this dispute, give us a call. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now here in Studio 3A is Stephen Hayes. He's a staff writer at the Weekly Standard and author of the book The Connection, How Al-Qaeda's Collaboration with Saddam Hussein Has Endangered America. Thanks very much for coming in today.
Good to be here, Neil.
In your book, you say there is evidence proving there was a long and strong collaboration between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda. How does it square with what the commission found yesterday?
Well, I think the commission got part of it right. I mean, in one sense, the commission didn't disagree with the Bush administration in that it laid out a series of contacts. I think the difference was when the commission said that there was no evidence I think they called it a collaborative relationship. I would argue that there was, in fact, evidence of a collaborative relationship, and I think George Tenet has presented such evidence. He did so in February of 2003 at the Senate Armed Services Committee. He said that there's credible reporting of Iraqis training al-Qaeda on chemicals and biologicals, was his exact quote. Mm-hmm. I think there's more evidence. I think there are telephone intercepts that indicate that the Iraqi regime was paying Ansar al-Islam, providing it funding, providing it with arms up in the north. That comes from both telephone intercepts and detainee debriefings. So I think it's a little bit short-sighted for the commission to leap to this conclusion.
So you're saying no dispute on the facts, but on the interpretation of the facts?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what exactly the September 11th commission looked at, presumably everything that was in the public record, or I hope everything that was in the public record. But it just seems strange, especially in light of the fact that elsewhere in the same report, they talked about evidence coming to light about possible al-Qaeda role in the Khobar Towers bombing, which had previously been assigned to Iran and Hezbollah. And they said basically, look, you know, there was this relationship. We didn't think that the Sunni militants would work with the Shiite extremists. And in fact, it looks like they did. And there's increasing evidence to suggest that al-Qaeda played an attack in those roles. Well, that was 8 years ago. So it's hard for me to see how the commission can say today, well, it looks like there was no evidence of any participation or any overlap now.
One of the big items in all of this discussion cited by Vice President Cheney several times was an alleged meeting between Mohammed Atta, the leader, the ringleader of the hijackers, and an Iraqi intelligence agent in Prague. Yesterday, we saw videotape of Mohammed Atta making a withdrawal from a bank in the United States. At the time, he was supposed to be having that meeting.
Well, I think if I'm not mistaken, the videotape was actually from April 4th, which would have been one of the last times he was thought by the people who believe in this meeting to have been in the United States before his trip. And what I think has been reported publicly and has been shown not to be accurate was that there were hotel receipts and car rental records and other things placing him in the United States. Excuse me.
Sure.
In fact, all that the U.S. intelligence community has potentially placing Atta in the United States at the same time, at the time of this alleged meeting, are cell phone records. And that's certainly not conclusive. I talked to one prosecutor who said he'd be laughed out of court if he presented those as evidence.
Well, joining us now is Larry Johnson, a former State Department counterterrorism expert and a former CIA intelligence officer. He's with us from his office in Bethesda, Maryland, by telephone. And Larry, good to have you with us today.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
You've heard what Stephen Hayes has been saying in response to what the commission said yesterday. What do you make of the argument at this point? Is there a definitive word one way or the other?
No, well, there are definitive facts, but unfortunately, a lot of this discussion is getting bantered about like Bill Clinton's discussion of what is. Was there contact between the Iraqis and al-Qaeda? Yes, that's true. But if you go to the documents that Stephen published in his excellent article last fall in the Weekly Standard, what those documents show is that there were multiple meetings, but no outcomes. There was requests for WMDs, but no agreement to supply. No evidence that such material was ever provided. There was requests to establish camps. The date of that information was 1998. No such camps were ever established. It's true that UBL, you know, Osama directed his followers not to attack Saddam from 1993. But then we're left with the facts of what international terrorist activity has been. From 1991 through 2002, there was a grand total of 4,342 attacks. Of those attacks, Iraq was directly implicated in 82. So this impression that Iraq was some sort of mass sponsor of international terrorism, that's simply misleading. It is not supported by the facts. It is true that people like Abu Nidal, Abu Ibrahim, and Yassin, who was implicated in the bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993, were hiding out in Iraq. But the problem you run into with those is that, number one, Abu Nidal, last terrorist act they were implicated in was in 1995, and Abu Nidal wound up dead, supposedly committed suicide while resisting arrest from Iraqi agents. They shot him three or four times. Abu Ibrahim is now in U.S. custody, my understanding. And we're still looking for Yassin.
Mm-hmm. And he was the man you were talking about just a moment ago, the Achille Lauro hijacker.
Correct. Yeah. What disturbs me about this is if it was an even-handed discussion by the Bush administration, particularly President Bush and Cheney, about what's central to the war on terrorism is going after state sponsors. The evidence points to Iran, as was reiterated yesterday, of this collaboration between a Shia regime and Abu Nidal, and Osama bin Laden. But not only do you have to rely upon the evidence yesterday, there was evidence introduced into court in October of 2000, just before the election, by Ali Muhammad, an Osama bin Laden operative, who testified to helping set up a meeting between Imad Mughniyeh, who's an operative for the Iranians, and Osama bin Laden. And why did bin Laden want the meeting? He saw Mughniyeh as a mentor, and out of that meeting came a commitment of providing training, financing, and support.
Mughniyeh, again, believed to be responsible for some of the bombings against American targets in Beirut.
Bombing
many
of
years
the here. Marine barracks in 1983, which yes. was the largest loss of life until September 11th. So
well,
my point is...
I think we got your point. We'll get back to you, Larry, but I wanted to get a response from Stephen Hayes.
Yeah, actually, I don't disagree with much of what Larry says. I think that he's right to point out that Iraq, and I haven't argued, I don't think the Bush administration has argued that Iraq was the primary sponsor of international terror over the past decade or two. What my argument in this book is that Iraq presented a unique threat because of the overlap with al-Qaeda, because of Saddam's displayed eagerness to exact revenge for the first Gulf War. And he has said repeatedly that the mother of all battles did not end.
Was a plot to assassinate the president's father.
There was a plot to assassinate the president's father in 1993. There was a plot to blow up Radio Free Europe building in Prague in the Czech Republic in 1998. And I think, there are signs that there was continuing Iraqi involvement in terrorism as late as October of 2002. And Filipino officials have said, and really not minced words much about, Iraqi involvement in Abu Sayyaf attacks in October of 2002, and one of which claimed the life of a U.S. soldier. I would agree with Larry that we should be careful not to suggest that Iraq was the main sponsor of all worldwide terrorism. But I do think that it's it's important to be sure about to communicate that Iraq never really stopped its participation in terrorism.
We're talking about the conclusions of the 9/11 panel yesterday about links between al-Qaeda and Iraq, or lack of links. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get a question from a listener. Bill is on the line with us from Denver, Colorado.
Yes, sir.
Hi, you're on the air, Bill. Go ahead.
Oh, very good. Yes, yeah, so I just have some questions for your guest there. He immediately came on the radio and mentioned the fact that George Tenet had established concrete links between the operation of the Hussein regime and how it connected to al-Qaeda. But nowhere in any media report nor in your guest's opinion have any substantive evidence been delivered. They say there's letters, there's correspondence. And I was wondering if you could address that and tell us how they would, those correspondences would justify an entire invasion of a country.
Stephen Hayes?
Yeah, I guess I would dispute the premise of the question. I think that there have been pieces of hard evidence that have been found. And, let me preface it by saying, the nature of this stuff, as Larry knows, is often murky and it's often circumstantial. So unfortunately, that's a lot of what we have to go on. That said, I think that there are instances of hard evidence of overlap between Iraq and al-Qaeda. And I think the telephone intercept from an Iraqi intelligence official to an Ansar al-Islam official promising $100,000 and praising the good work of Ansar al-Islam in May of 2002 is one such piece of hard evidence. That evidence has been corroborated now by numerous detainees in northern Iraq who have spoken both to journalists and to U.S. intelligence officials. So I think it's fairly clear at this point. I mean, if the discussion is about hard evidence, that seems to me to be pretty good evidence.
Larry Johnson, let me ask you, Ansar al-Islam, the al-Qaeda-associated group that established an enclave in northern Iraq, that was a presence in Iraq.
Well, but the thing that we ignore is that they were receiving support from Iran. They were receiving much more support from Iran than from Iraq, number one. And when it came time to flee, they didn't flee down into the heart of Baghdad and say, Saddam, protect us. They took off for Iran. Now, look, at the end of the day, what we're facing on the front of international terrorism is a group of committed Salafists, these Islamic jihadists. And unfortunately or fortunately, whichever your point of view, the one country which has been consistent in backing and supporting that movement for the last 24 years is the government of Iran, not the government of Iraq. And in fact, our policy of supporting Saddam Hussein up until 1989 was predicated upon trying to wall off the government of Iran. What we've done is we've now destroyed the one government that was helping keep them at bay, and we've opened it up now that we've seen a surge, a dramatic surge, of Islamic extremist terrorism, not just in Iraq, but throughout the Middle East and North Africa.
Stephen Hayes, getting back to the al-Qaeda and Iraq links, this was not the only rationale for the war in Iraq. Obviously, there was weapons of mass destruction. There was Saddam Hussein's abuse of his own people, and the 300,000 graves discovered in Iraq after the war. But the link between al-Qaeda and Iraq was an important one. It lent urgency to the concerns that weapons of mass destruction might somehow be given to this group, which would obviously ruthless in its use. Based on the evidence that we do know and what the commission came up with, does that substantiate the decision to go to war?
It's a good question. I mean, I think it does. I think that Saddam presented a unique threat based on what we knew about his past performance, his unwillingness to abide by the UN resolutions. Certainly his overlap with al-Qaeda, which I think the administration probably should have made more of an issue of rather than less. I think they were actually rather understated in making their case on the overlap, not only with al-Qaeda, but with international terrorist groups. And the demonstrated willingness of Saddam to exact revenge for the first Gulf War. Also, the human rights case, I think, is one that has not gotten a lot of attention, frankly, and I think it should get a lot more attention. I mean,
but is there a hard enough evidence in your mind, again, in 30 seconds, if you were president of the United States on this link to al-Qaeda, say, well, that's enough for me.
I think the link to al-Qaeda combined with all of these other factors made Iraq the unique threat that it was and made the war justified. It's a good question. I don't know that I would have done it with the WMD or the human rights on their own. But with the overlap with Al-Qaeda, I think that's pretty strong.
Larry Johnson, thanks very much for being with us today. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Larry Johnson, a former State Department counterterrorism expert, a former CIA intelligence officer. He was on the phone from Bethesda, Maryland. Stephen Hayes, also thank you for coming in today.
Thanks, Neil. Enjoyed it.
Stephen Hayes, a staff writer at the Weekly Standard, author of The Connection, How Al-Qaeda's Collaboration with Saddam Hussein Has Endangered America. He was with us here in Studio 3A. All of this, more details on this later today. Earlier in the program, we heard excerpts of audio recordings released by the 9/11 Commission today. You can hear lots more at our website, npr.org. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.